polarization in British politics will be a debate about should we be doing a much closer relationship with America or not. And so I think the political debate in Britain will become one between pro-Trump Americans and anti-Trump Americans, and therefore pro-Europeans. This is the beginning of the end of Brexit, in my view, the debate that is going to be unleashed by a Trump presidency.
Hello, I'm Brendan Donnelly. I'm the Director of the Federal Trust for Education and Research, and I'll be talking today with our Chair, John Stevens, about the result of the American presidential elections. John, I know you follow very closely American politics. Were you surprised by the result of the presidential election?
Well, yes and no. No, in the sense that it was quite clear that on the crucial issues in polling, namely the economy and immigration, Trump had a very secure lead, really right from the start. But I was a bit surprised because I've always thought that there was a strong moral dimension in American politics and in the religiosity of American society, and that someone of Trump's record should actually be able to make it back to the White House is a little surprising. It does indicate a very fundamental change, I think, which has been building over time in the moral framework of American political discourse.
Are there any lessons for European politicians, both continental and British European politicians, about the way in which they can win elections in future or avoid getting defeated in elections?
Well, I think there are two features of the American political scene which are also relevant in Europe. One is the growing inequality of society and the differential impact of contemporary economic structures on various sections of the population. And in particular, the importance of people's perception of their economic circumstances rather than the overall performance. The American economy, measured in GDP relative to its competitors, is actually doing very well. But that was not perceived by a very large section of the population who were hit by cost of living rises, inflation, and the rest. And the other thing is this growing issue of identity in politics, national identity in politics. So the American debate was about what it means to be an American, who are Americans, and how you protect American identity, in particular against foreign influences, against immigrants. And that is also, of course, a debate going on in Europe. What is a European identity? The growing saliency of immigration across European politics, including in the UK.
Do you think right-wing politicians in Europe will be encouraged by Trump's victory and think that there are particular lessons for them to learn?
Not really, because there is a very fundamental difference between the right in Europe and the right in America. The right in Europe is actually fundamentally rather anti-American, not just overall in geopolitical terms, but also in terms of its view of society. Europe is not fundamentally an immigrant society. European identity is based on deep historic roots. This is totally different from the situation in the United States, which is, of course, completely created by immigration.
Let's turn to some of the specific international flashpoints that might or might not be affected by Donald Trump's election. What do you think will be his attitude, his real attitude, as opposed to his rhetorical attitude to Ukraine?
Well, I think there is a misunderstanding about why Trump is in favor of Russia in the Ukraine dispute, which he is without question. And that is because his main target is China. And he believes that what the US needs to do is to get Russia on side against China in the way that previously the US got China on side against Russia, which brought down the Soviet Union. And so that is his priority. And I do believe that he's going to push for a settlement in Ukraine, which is likely to be very disadvantageous to the Ukrainians. Whether the Ukrainians go along with that, whether such a settlement can last, and whether Russia can be detached from China, having now become so dependent upon it in the course of this war, those are very open questions.
The other great foreign policy issue, which does seem to have played a role in some people's voting to the disadvantage of the Democrats, is the Middle East. What do you think Trump's will bring to the table in Gaza and Lebanon that his predecessor didn't?
Well, I think there is no question that Trump will support an Israeli attempt to extend Israeli occupation fully to North Gaza, certainly perhaps the whole of Gaza. And above all, I think the issue will be the West Bank, which has always been at the heart of Israel's perception of what it is really about. It is, after all, historically the core of the ancient Israels. And I think that is now an open question, that I think that there will be American support for Israeli attempts to essentially take over the West Bank. Now, how that is presented internationally and what impact that has on the rest of the Middle East is an open question. I think this is perhaps also part of Trump's overriding obsession with China as the rival to America. And the implications of the Middle East for Chinese influence in Central Asia, and also on the position that India takes towards the Muslim world to the West, is also an important factor in that. So there are wider implications, but Israel, I think, will now be seeking and will have US support for a full occupation of the West Bank in particular.
If that does happen, then that will obviously be something that incurs considerable criticism from the United Nations. How different will the American attitude be towards international organizations such as the United Nations, NATO, and the European Union under Trump?
Well, and they're all very different. I think the American contempt for the UN will increase under Trump, and the powerlessness of the UN will thereby be enhanced. What that means for other groupings like the BRICS, notably, I think it will enhance that sense. There will be a greater degree of choosing sides, essentially, between China and the United States, and the question will be where Europe fits into that, because Europe is obviously going to be very reluctant to break all trade relations with China and with the Chinese influenced area of Asia, and so this is going to be a major rift potentially developing, and this could be particularly problematic for the UK, which has ambitions both to be trading with Europe, trading with Asia, and also trading and seeking perhaps a special trade relationship with the United States.
Is such a thing going to be possible with Trump, a special trading relationship with the United States?
I think it's very unlikely that Trump is interested in doing such a deal, and the Republican control of Congress is now complete, and I can't see much support for any trade deal that would be remotely acceptable or advantageous to the UK. I mean, any plausible trade deal with the US would entail the evisceration of British agriculture and the reduction, essentially, of the City of London to a sort of back office status. I mean, among other consequences, it would also force us to be choosing sides in this overall trade war, which the target of which for Trump is China. And that does pose very great difficulties. It'll mean that the Americans will be requiring, in return for a more advantageous trade treatment for the UK, that we don't do trade with the people who They are targeting, above all, the Chinese, but also possibly the European Union.
What do you think the implications of Trump's victory will be for domestic British politics? Perhaps we can start with the right of the political spectrum, Reform and the Conservatives. What do you think will be the impact on them, perhaps particularly on Reform and Farage of Trump's victory?
Well, I think this does give Farage a huge platform and a huge leverage, because he will be seeking to sell the fact that he has got a special relationship with Trump, that he will be able to secure a trade deal that will make Brexit economically viable. I mean, he will be promising that. In my view, that is a promise that won't be cannot be fulfilled.
I don't see how it can be. I don't see, given that he won't have any governmental position, how can he be in a position to
Well, he will be
promise
using
it?
this as a platform for pushing reforms interests vis-a-vis the Conservative Party. And I think the chances of Farage now effectively dominating and taking over the Conservative Party are greatly enhanced by a Trump victory. And the question is, will there be a split in the Conservative Party between those who are prepared to go along with essentially an American, pro-American policy, pro-Trump policy, led by Farage, and those who will not wish to do that? And I think that tension is going to come to the fore very quickly. And I cannot see the Conservative Party surviving that tension.
What about on the left? Tony Blair found it very difficult to sell to his party his association with and collaboration with George W. Bush. It seems to me that Starmer will find it infinitely more difficult to sell collaboration with Donald Trump to his party. Where will Todd Starmer end up in that equation, do you think?
I agree. I think it is going to be extremely difficult. And I think Trump is going to essentially drive the Labour Party into a pro-European position. I mean, it's hoping to avoid this question. And that, I think, is why one reason why there was so much enthusiasm for the prospect of a Harris presidency. Now they are confronted with a very stark choice. And it will be impossible, I think, for Starmer to take a strongly pro-Trump line. He certainly won't be able to get or won't seek even a trade deal with Trump's America. And that will be the polarization in British politics. Will be a debate about should we be doing a much closer relationship with America or not. And so I think the political debate in Britain will become one between pro-Trump Americans and anti-Trump Americans, and therefore pro-Europeans. This is the beginning of the end of Brexit, in my view, the debate that is going to be unleashed by a Trump presidency.
I can see that may begin on the defence field, and there is an overlap of interest, an emerging, clear overlap of interest between the United Kingdom and our continental neighbours. But will that lead to reintegration into the rest of the European Union structures, the single market, the customs union, the freedom of movement? How do
Well,
you see that as working out?
it's going to be very difficult because, as we've discussed in previous videos, there is no slow halfway house route back into the EU. It is a question of accepting a European destiny rather than some other destiny, whether it be American or something else. And that is a very difficult argument to have. But Trump has fired the starting gun on this debate, and we'll have to see where it's going to go. It's going to be a very rough ride. There's no question about that, because Britain is, to a degree that far exceeds that of other European countries, genuinely split between looking across the Atlantic and looking across the Channel. And this debate, once unleashed, will have all sorts of ramifications and consequences. It's going to be highly disruptive for the UK.
Do you think there's any chance that, particularly as far as NATO is concerned, Trump's bark will turn out to be worse than his bite? NATO survived the first period of his him in office. Will it be able to survive pretty well intact the second period?
Well, I come back to the point that it's wrong to see Trump truly as an isolationist, I think. His target is China. And his attitude towards Russia is because he hopes that Russia can be detached from China and turned against China. That's also what governs his attitude towards India, his attitude towards a Pacific policy. And the question will be whether he thinks that Europe is capable of being corralled or will be useful in a confrontation with China or not. And this extends beyond the military field. It's also about the continued status of the dollar as a global currency relative to the ambitions that China has via the BRICS and other entities of developing alternative payment systems to that of the dollar. So it will really boil down to how the Europeans position themselves in this emerging confrontation between China and America, and how Britain will fit into that. And in the defense field, at the moment, we have been talking about a pivot towards the Far East. We've got the AUKUS deal with Australia, for example. It's not clear really where we lie in that position. And the same is true of the economic field, because we clearly hope to have trade relations with China and with the Chinese sphere in East Asia. But that may be increasingly difficult if America pursues this confrontation with China.
On the European mainland, if the United States substantially reduces its military aid to Ukraine, will the Europeans, including the United Kingdom, be able to step up their efforts to make up for what's lacking from the American side?
Well, it depends whether one's focusing simply on support for Ukraine or the wider defense area. I think what is absolutely clear is that Trump has unleashed a debate in Europe about true strategic autonomy. And that is not primarily actually about conventional weapons. It is about the nuclear deterrent. And so I think there is going to be some form of accord, focusing primarily on Germany and France initially, but with other countries involved, that will give Europe strategic autonomy in the nuclear field, because that is really what lies behind the weakness of and uncertainty of Europe in its dealings with Russia over Ukraine, is the question of the reliability of the American nuclear umbrella. And that is what has held NATO together. That is why Europeans intervened with the Americans in Afghanistan, for example. It was to secure the American nuclear umbrella. And I think people will now, in Europe now, see that that is not viable as a long-term position. And therefore, they will seek to do it on their own. How that happens and what the controls are for that could be a major motor of deeper European political integration, because after all, you can't get more fundamental than defense, and you can't get more fundamental in defense than nuclear deterrence.
Like any prime minister and party leader, Keir Starmer clearly spends quite a lot of time thinking about the next election, the next general election. Do you think that the success of Trump in getting re-elected will lead him to fear that in 2028 he'll be facing Boris Johnson again, with the prospect that Boris Johnson might beat him and become the next prime minister?
I think Boris Johnson is finished in British politics. The Farage is the man to watch on the right. And I think he now has a real chance of emerging reform with a large section of the Conservative Party and being the prime ministerial candidate opposite Starmer in 2028 or 2029. Now, the question is, will such a platform that is essentially a pro-American one and a hardline capitalist one in many respects, although not exclusively, because Trump is a confusion between very hardline free market capitalism and a leveling up agenda, even though it is more rhetoric than reality. That is the sort of platform that Farage will be putting forward, a J.D. Vance platform, in essence. And the question is, will that be attractive to the British electorate? In my view, it won't be. But a lot will depend upon whether the part of the conservative tradition that doesn't go with reform is able to establish an identity in British politics. And that depends on what attitude that tradition takes towards Europe in particular, if at the same time the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats are moving in that direction also in reaction to a Trump presidency. So I think what Starmer will be looking forward to now is the possibility of a combination in British politics, perhaps even eventually a survival via the possibility of coalition in order to shut out what is going to be a very serious challenge from a reform-orientated conservative stroke reform grouping as his principal opponent.
Well, thank you very much. We've had plenty to talk about, and the inauguration hasn't yet even taken place. I'm sure that the 4 years of Trump's presidency will give us material for many, many such discussions. Thank you very much indeed, John, and thank you to all our viewers and listeners. Please follow us on our website, Federal Trust for Education and Research. Goodbye.